the observation of the facts and evidences of Christianity and the objections of infidels answered. General observations. I suppose it will be acknowledged by the deists that the Christian religion is the most rational and pure that ever was established in any society of men, and that they will accept only themselves as serving God in a manner more according to his will than the Christian manner. But can any believe that God has so wholly thrown away mankind that there never yet has been a society of men that have rightly paid respect to their Creator? It is easily proved that the highest end and happiness of man is to view God's excellency and to love him, and receive expressions of his love to them. This love, including all those other affections which depend upon and are necessarily connected with it, we express in worship. The highest end of society among men, therefore, must be to assist and join with each other in this employment. But how comes it to pass that this end of society was never yet obtained among deists? Where was ever any social worship statedly performed by them? And were they disposed socially to express their love and honor, which way would they go about it? They have nothing from God to direct them. Doubtless there would be perpetual dissensions about it, unless they were disposed to fall in with the Christian model. We may be convinced, therefore, that revelation is necessary to right social worship. There never was any religion but that which we profess, and those formed from it that pretended to inform us of the nature of God, that there is but one God, how the world came into being and how God governs it. What other religion discovered God's great designs, what is his will and how he should be served? Declared the reward of obedience and punishment of disobedience, the nature of man's happiness and the end for which he was made, that gave us good moral rules, told us what will become of the world hereafter, explain how we came to be sinful and miserable, and how we may escape sin and misery, gave an account of the great revolutions of the world and the successions of God's works in the universe, and where his true worshippers have been, and what has befallen them, or informed us how the world came to apostatize from the true worship of God. Christianity is the only religion that ever pretended that there should a time come when it should be the religion of the world in general. The Jewish religion, as at present professed, most certainly differs from what reason evidently declares to be the essence of religion. It does not state aright the highest end and happiness of man, his chief business and greatest misery in the true worship of God. Undoubtedly, the Messiah was to come to advance the best interest and true happiness of mankind, which certainly consists in what the gospel declares are Jesus advanced, and not in what the Jews expected the Messiah would do. I think it is certain that seeing the miracles of Christ were done for 3.5 years, so publicly all over Judea, and seeing there was such violent opposition there so soon after against the Christians, if the manner of fact had been false, they would have been denied by the Jews generally. And if this had been the case, we should have known it. The Jews afterwards would much more have denied them, which it is evident that they did not. If they had, they would have been also denied by the heathen who arose against the Christians, but they were not denied. It is impossible that the whole world should have turned Christian in 300 years after the facts were so publicly done, if they had been generally false. If the Jews had denied the matters of fact at first, they would have undoubtedly have denied them at this day, seeing they are so tenacious of the traditions of their fathers. Christ's resurrection was openly published within a few days after his death, on the day of Pentecost. It is undoubted that the number of the Christians increased everywhere exceedingly from that time, so that a considerable alteration was speedily made by it over the face of the world, whether the matters of fact were written or not. They were universally talked about. The conversion of the Roman Empire to the Christian religion was the most remarkable thing that ever has happened among the nations of the world, and it would be unaccountable that should have happened upon the story of a few obscure men without inquiring into the matters related. I am convinced of the necessity of her revelation, considering how negligent, dull, and careless about a future happiness I should be if I was left to discover that happiness by unassisted reason, especially if there were no revelation at all about what is pleasing to God, how He accepts our services, after what manner He loves His servants, how He will pardon sin, and so on. It is certain that Jesus Christ had none of the advantages of education to get learning and knowledge. And it is also certain that everywhere in His speeches He showed an uncommon insight into things, a great knowledge of the true nature of virtue and morality, and what was most acceptable to God, vastly beyond the rest of the nation, take scribes and Pharisees and all. And how did He come by it? How did He get it at Nazareth? Those who have not an education in these days may get much by books, which are so common, but books of learning were not to be had then. Yea, it is evident that He knew vastly more than any of the philosophers and wise men in the whole world by those rational descriptions which He gave of God and His attributes, of His government and providence, and of man's nature, business, end, and happiness, of what is pleasing to God, of the immortality of the soul in a future state. How did He know so exactly truths perhaps demonstrable by reason, but they had never been found out before? That Christ was really dead appears from many considerations. It is very unreasonable to imagine that He feigned Himself dead. For what reason had He to think that He should have success if He did, or to expect it would take Him down before He was quite dead? Or if He had such a design, it was impossible that He should act His part so accurately as not to be discovered or suspected. Besides, if He was not dead when they took Him down from the cross, He was very near it. And no doubt but His grievous wounds, the loss of blood, and fasting for so long would have extinguished His life before the third day. And if then He only rose out of a swoon, how came He perfectly sound at once? Doubtless His hands and feet were much torn by bearing His weights along on iron spikes driven through them. And if He rose from the dead in no supernatural sense, where did He go when He rose? What became of Him? We have no account of His dying again, nor was He yet to be found after a few weeks. If Christianity was not true, it would never afford so much matter for rational and penetrating minds to be exercised upon. If it were false, such minds would find it empty, and it would be a force upon the intellect to be set upon meditating upon that which has no other foundation and mutual dependence to be discovered in its parts than what is accidental. A strong and piercing mind would feel itself exceedingly bound and hindered. But in fact, there is a like liberty in the study of Christianity as much improvement of the mind is in the study of natural philosophy, or any study whatsoever, yea, a great deal more. And whatever may be said about Mahometan divinity, I cannot be convinced, but that a mind that has a faculty and habit of clear and distinct reasoning would find nothing but chains, fetters, and confusion if it should pretend to fix its reason upon it. Seeing the beauty of the corporal world consists chiefly in representing spiritual beauties, and the beauties of minds are infinitely the greatest, we therefore may conclude that God, when He created the world, showed His own perfection and beauties far the most charmingly and clearly in the spiritual part of the world. But seeing spiritual beauty consists principally in virtue and holiness, and seeing there is so little of this beauty to be seen now on earth, Hence, we may fairly conclude that there has been a great fall in defection in this part of the spiritual world, from its primitive beauty and charms. Corollary. Seeing this is so agreeable to the account that the Christian religion gives of the matter, and seeing it is evident from many arguments that God intends not to give over man as lost, but has a merciful intention of restoring him to his primitive beauty, and seeing we are told this, in a manner of it, in the Christian religion alone, and seeing the account is so rational, it is a great confirmation of the truth of Christianity. It is a convincing argument for the truth of the Christian religion, and that it stands upon a most sure basis that none have ever yet been able to prove it false, though there have been many men of all sorts, many fine wits and men of great learning that have spent themselves and ransacked the world for arguments against it, and this for many ages. It is exceedingly improbable that it should ever enter into the head of any mortal to invent such a strange system of visions as that of the revelation of John, of which he himself could give no account of the meaning or design, and did not pretend to it. What design could he have in it? But if he had a design, the frame of the vision is not a whit like a random invention without any view or design as to its interpretation. It does not seem to me at all likely that any person among the Jews so long ago should have so perfect a knowledge of nature and the secret springs of human affections as to be able to feign anything so perfectly and exquisitely agreeable to nature as the incidents in Joseph's history and the other histories of the Bible, particularly the history of Genesis. Such kind of miracles as healing the sick, blind, the deaf, dumb, and lame, and so on, and creating bread and flesh, and turning water into wine, are greater than those that are so much more pompous as causing universal darkness, dividing the sea, the shaking and burning of Mount Sinai, and so on. The healing of the sick and distracted do more especially manifest divine power for this cause, that we have reason to conclude mankind especially are subjects to God's providence, and that their health and their exercise of their reason are alone in His hands, and that it is not in the power of any evil spirit to give them and to take them at His pleasure, however great power he may be supposed to have over the inanimate creatures. When a person appears that is evidently the whole course of nature at all times subject to his command, so that he can alter it how and when he pleases, we have the greatest reason to think that person has divine authority, and that the author and upholder of nature favors him and gives approval to what he pretends by it. For we know that the course of nature is God's established course of acting upon creatures, and we cannot think that he would give power to any evil spirit to alter it when he pleases, for evil purposes. But Christ manifestly had the course of nature so subject to his will and command. It would not have been proper for Christ constantly to dwell among men after he had risen from the dead. Men would have been exceedingly apt to fall into idolatry, and because they saw the man Christ Jesus, would be apt to direct their worship to the human nature. Therefore, we are not to see the man Christ Jesus till we are perfected, and are not liable to temptation on such occasions. For this reason, probably it was not convenient for Christ to appear in great majesty and glory when on earth, but the contrary for this reason. Christ endeavored to hide his transfiguration and many other miracles till after he was risen. And for this reason, he did not converse constantly with his disciples after his resurrection, as before it. All these things were done in a manner the most wise and fit that can be imagined. If human reason by anything that has happened since the creation be really very much corrupted, and if God is still propitious and does not throw us off, but reserves us for the end for which he made us, it cannot be imagined that he would leave us to our reason as the only rule to guide us in that business, which is the highest end of life, for it is not to be depended upon, and yet we exceedingly need something that may be depended upon, in reference to our everlasting welfare. It does not seem to me reasonable to suppose that if God be merciful after we have forfeited his favor, he will manifest his mercy only in some mitigations of that misery into which we have plunged ourselves, leaving us inevitably to endure the rest, but that he will quite restore us in case of our acceptance of his offered favor. It seems much the most rational to suppose that the universal law by which mankind are to be governed should be a written law. For if that rule by which God intends the world shall be regulated and kept in decent and happy order be supposed to be expressed no other way than by nature, man's prejudices will render it in innumerable circumstances a most uncertain thing. For though it must be granted that men who are willing to transgress may abuse written as well as unwritten laws, and expound them so as may best serve their turn upon occasion, yet it must be allowed that in the nature of the thing revelation is a better guard than a bare scheme of principles without it. For men must take more pains to conquer the sense of a standing written law, which is ready to confront them upon all occasions. They must more industriously tamper with their passions and blind their understandings before they can bring themselves to believe what they have a mind to believe, in contradiction to the words of an express and formal declaration of God's almighty will, than there can be any pretense or occasion for, when they have no more than their own thoughts and ideas to manage. These are flexible things, and a man may much more easily turn and wind them as he pleases, and he can evade a plain and positive law which determines the kinds and measures of his duty, and threatens disobedience in such terms as require long practice and experience to make handsome salvos and distinctions to get over. And upon this account also, that it is fit in every case when the law is made known, that also the sanctions, rewards, and punishments should be known at the same time. But nature could never have determined these with any certainty. Raising the dead to life is given in the Old Testament as a certain proof of the authority and mission of a prophet, and that what he says is the truth. 1 Kings 17, verse 24. And a woman said to Elijah, "By this I know that you are a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is true." So that if the Old Testament is the word of God, Jesus was a true prophet. The being of God is also evident by the scriptures, and the scriptures themselves are an evidence of their own divine authority, after the same manner as the existence of a human thinking being is evident by the motions, behavior, and speech of a body animated by a rational mind. For we know this no otherwise than by the consistency, harmony, and concurrence of the train of actions and sound, and their agreement to all that we can suppose to be in a rational mind. These are a clear evidence of understanding and design, which are the original of these actions. Such an universal appearance of a wonderful and glorious design, such stamps everywhere of exalted wisdom, majesty, and holiness, in matter, manner, contexture, and aim, that the evidence is the same, and that the scriptures are the word and work of a divine mind, to one that is thoroughly acquainted with them, is that the words and actions of an understanding man are from a rational mind. An infant, when it first comes into the world, sees persons act, and hears their voice before it has so much comprehension as to see something of their consistence, harmony, and concurrence. It makes no distinction between their bodies and other things, or motions and sounds, and the motions and sounds of inanimate things. But as its comprehension increases, the understanding and design begin to appear. So it is with men that are as little acquainted with the scriptures as infants with the actions of human bodies. They cannot see any evidence of a divine mind as the original of it, because they have not comprehension enough to apprehend the harmony, wisdom, and so on. Were it not for divine revelation, I am persuaded that there is no one doctrine of that which we call natural religion, which, notwithstanding all philosophy and learning, would not be forever involved in darkness, doubts, endless disputes, and dreadful confusion. Many things now they are revealed seem very plain. It is one thing to see that a truth is exceedingly agreeable to reason after we have had it explained to us and have been told the reasons of it, and another to find it out and clearly and certainly to explain it by mere reason. It is one thing to prove a thing after we are shown how, and another to find it out and prove it of ourselves. If there never had been any revelation, I believe the world would have been full of endless disputes about the very being of a God, whether the world had existed from eternity or not, and whether the form and order of the world did not resolve from the mere nature of matter. 10,000 different schemes there would have been about it, and if it were allowed that there was a first cause of all things, there would have been endless disputes and abundance of uncertainty to determine what son of a thing that first cause was. Some, it may be, would have thought that it was properly an intelligent mind and a voluntary agent. Others might say that it was some principle of things of which we could have no kind of ideas. Some would have called it a voluntary agent, some a principle exerting itself by a natural necessity. There might have been many schemes contrived about this, and some would like one best and some another. And amongst those that held that the original of all things was superior intelligence and will, there probably would have been everlasting doubts and disputes whether there was one only or more. Some perhaps would have said there was but one, some that there were two, the one the principle of good, the other the principle of evil. Others that there was a society or a world of them. And among those that held that there was but one mind, there would be abundance of uncertainty what sort of a being he was, whether he was good or evil, whether he was just or unjust, holy or wicked, gracious or cruel, or whether he was partly good and partly evil, and how far he concerned himself with the world after he had made it, and how far things were owing to his providence, or whether at all. How far he concerned himself with mankind, what was pleasing to him in them, and what was displeasing, or whether he cared anything about it, whether he delighted in justice and order or not, and whether he would reward the one and punish the other, and how and when and where and to what degree. There would have been abundance of doubt and dispute concerning what this mind expected from us and how we should behave towards him, or whether he expected we should anywise concern ourselves with him, whether we ever ought to apply ourselves to him any way, whether we ought to speak to him as expecting that he would take any notice of us, how we should show our respect to him, whether we ought to praise and commend him in our addresses, whether we ought to ask that of him which we need, whether or not he would forgive any after they had offended him, when they had reason to think they were forgiven, and what they should do that they might be forgiven, and whether it is ever worth a while for them that are so often offending to try for it, whether there were not some sins so great that God never would upon any terms forgive them, and how great it must be in order to that. Men would be exceedingly at a loss to know when they were in favor with him, and upon what terms they could be in his favor, David being a dreadful uncertainty about a future state, whether there is any, and if there be, whether it is a state of rewards and punishments, and if it is, what kind of state it is, and how men are to be rewarded and punished, and to what degree, and for how long, whether man's soul be eternal or not, and if it be, whether it is to remain in another world in a fixed state, or often changing. Every man would plead for the lawfulness of this or that practice, just as suited his fancy, and agreed with his interest and appetite. And there would be room for a great deal of uncertainty and difference of opinion among those that were most speculative and impartial. There would be uncertainty in a multitude of instances what was just and what unjust. It'd be very uncertain how far self-interest should govern men, and how far love to our neighbor, how far revenge would be right, and whether or not a man might hate his neighbor, and for what causes, what degree of passion and ambition was justifiable and laudable, what sensual enjoyments were lawful, and what were not, how far we ought to honor, respect, and submit to our parents and other superiors, or how far it would be lawful to dissemble and deceive. It seems to me there would be infinite confusion in these things, and that there would hardly be any such thing as conscience in the world. The world has had a great deal of experience of the necessity of a revelation. We may see it in all ages that have been without a revelation, and what gross darkness and brutal stupidity have such places in these matters. Always been overwhelmed in how many and how great and foolish mistakes and what endless uncertainty and differences of opinion have there been among the most learned and philosophical. Yet, there never was a real trial how it would be with mankind in this respect without having anything from revelation. I believe that most of those parts of natural religion that were held by the heathen before Christ were owing to tradition from those of their forefathers who had the light of revelation. And many of those being most evidently agreeable to reason were most easily upheld and propagated. Many of their wise men who had influence and rule over them saw their rectitude and agreeableness to reason better than others. Some of them traveled much, and though things which appeared most agreeable to their reason, they transplanted to their own country. Judea was a sort of light among the nations, though they did not know it. The practice and principles of that country kept the neighboring nations in remembrance of traditions which they had from their forefathers, and so kept them from degenerating so much as otherwise they would have done. Fact. The philosophers had the foundation of most of their truths from the ancients or from the Phoenicians, or what they picked up here and there of the relics of revelation. How came all the heathen nations to agree in the custom of sacrificing? The light of nature did not teach it to them. Without a doubt, they had it from tradition, and therefore it needs not seem strange that what of natural religion they had amongst them came the same way. I'm persuaded that mankind would have been like a herd of beasts with respect to their knowledge and all important truth, if there had never been any such thing as revelation in the world, and that they never would have risen out of their brutality. We see that those who live at the greatest distance from revelation are far the more brutish. The heathen in America and in some of the utmost parts of Asia and Africa are far more barbarous than those who formerly lived in Rome, Greece, Egypt, Syria, and Chaldea. Their traditions are more worn out, and they are more distant from places enlightened with revelation. The Chinese descended probably from the subjects of Noah, that holy man, and have held more by tradition from him than other nations, and so have been a more civilized people. The increase of learning and philosophy in the Christian world is owing to revelation. The doctrine of revealed religion are the foundation of all useful and excellent knowledge. The Word of God leads barbarous nations into the way of using their understandings. It brings their minds into a way of reflecting and abstracted reasoning, and delivered from uncertainty in the first principles, such as the being of God, the dependence of all things upon Him, being subject to His influence and providence, and being ordered by his wisdom. Such principles as these are the basis of all true philosophy, as appears more and more, as philosophy improves. Revelation delivers mankind from that distraction and confusion which discourages all attempts to improve in knowledge. Revelation actually gives men a most rational account of religion and morality, and the highest philosophy, and all the greater things that belong to learning concerning God, the world, human nature, spirits, providence, time, and eternity. Revelation not only gives us the foundation and first principles of all learning, but it gives us the end, the only end, that would be sufficient to move man to the pursuit.